Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 21, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Historic Culver House Still Needs Some Help. The Culver House is so old, the story of its rescue from demolition has become history. The 128-year-old red brick, twin-turreted Queen Anne-style mansion on 412 West Prairie Avenue was on the demolition list as far back as 1980, and from 1994 to 1999 it seemed an inevitability that the mansion would be razed. Kim Aucamp, president of the Historic Decatur Foundation, and foundation board member Lynn Potter were part of the fight to save the Culver House. They want to restore it from the eyesore it had become to as close to the original as possible. The goal is a Decatur History Museum on the first floor of the mansion. We want to get the main floor finished enough to get people in there to start enjoying it, Aucamp said. It's a grand old house. There aren't too many of these left, and we think it would be a great addition to the neighborhood because you have the Staley Museum and the Mueller Museum and the Oglesby Mansion, another historic site. But the museum has been in the plans for 17 years now, and there's still a lot of money and work to be put in before that becomes a reality. We need trim work. We need plumbing. We need access to water, Aucamp said. We need a handrail. We need tuck pointing, because the previous work didn't hold up. And eventually we'll need a lift in order to be Americans with Disability Act, ADA, accessible. That's a major expenditure. We'll have to do some modifications and put in a sidewalk and a parking space out front. Potter and Aucamp have been trying to save the mansion as far back as 1990. The house has come a long way since Potter stood in front of a bulldozer preparing to demolish the mansion in 1999. You can still see where the bulldozer broke through the wall out there. That's when I stood in front of the bulldozer and said, "You can't do this," Potter said. The guy in the bulldozer was very nice about it. He didn't want to get involved. Culver House was saved in May of 2000 when a $150,000 state grant check was presented by former state senator N. Dwayne Noland of Blue Mound. The grant came with the stipulation that the home eventually be used for a historic Decatur museum. We put our tears on them and they gave us the money. Illinois had some money then, Potter said. In 1994, Stephen Luker had purchased the property, and the Decatur Herald and Review reported that he would need $30,000 to make it a home and $150,000 to restore it to its historic majesty. Decatur's Director of Community Standards, Dave Griffiths, said in his dreams and said it would take $150,000 just to bring it up to code. It turned out Griffiths was right. The $150,000 Aucamp's group received was enough to fix the roof to what it looked like originally, and it also helped renovate some of the downstairs rooms. But even with more donations here and there, the house is nowhere close to historic majesty. We took out 8 or 9 dumpsters full of trash, tore most of the apartment partitions down, and have the house back to more like what the footprint was originally, Aucamp said. Every time we'd open up a part of the house to repair it, there would be something else major underneath. We were basically down to stud walls and rafters, and now we have some walls and floors. The house was built in 1889 for Josiah K. Clokey, a lawyer and real estate developer, a turn-of-the-century Decatur big shot. But Clokey didn't finish construction. In 1901, another notable Decaturite, John H. Culver, purchased the house and finished it. Culver was the president of Culver Electric Company, supplying electric power in Decatur, and was a book collector, at one time owning about 5,000 volumes. Culver died in 1943 at the age of 84. His wife lived in the house until June of 1950. She died in 1956, and the house was inherited by Elizabeth Schellebarger, who sold it to Roy Phillips. The house was remodeled into 6 spacious apartments. A third-floor apartment featured a skylight, and another boasted a living room and bedroom fireplaces. But eventually Phillips sold the property, and by the 1970s, the house was converted into 8 Section 8 apartments and fell into disrepair. A fire in 1979 nearly destroyed the house. In 1988, a man murdered his girlfriend there, and a year later it was declared unfit for human habitation. There have been no regular dwellers there since January 1989, and despite the improvements made, the house can't be opened to the public until more improvements are made. We have a temporary hand railing on the front steps, so we need to fix that, Potter said, and there's still a lot that needs done on the interior. The insurance would cost us a lot to hold a function there. That's why the reception the foundation is having Saturday is being held at Potter's home at 366 South Edward Street in a third-floor ballroom. There will be a reading by Potter of the first chapter from the book she's writing about the Culver House, and a portion of Dale Irwin's Decatur collection will be displayed. Potter said the goal of the reception is to find help with finishing the front room stairway. We have the stairway, but we need someone to put it together for us, Potter said. We're not charging to get in, but we will have a donation box. Getting the house ready to be a museum is one thing. Making it one is another. Besides establishing nonprofit status, a museum must have systems and policies, bylaws for the board, expectations for the director, and policies for Ascension. I've never done it, but I don't envy anyone trying, said Nathan Pierce, director of the Macon County History Museum and former director of the Hancock County History Museum. There's a lot to set up, but funding is the main issue. What's the long-term solution funding-wise? You might get some donations up front to get it going, but maintaining it is the biggest problem. Now, if you go, it's 3 to 5 p.m. Saturday, April 22nd. It's at Lynn Potter's home at 366 South Edward Street. What is to share a cup of champagne punch as the historic Decatur Foundation unveils its plans for the Culver House. Potter reads the first chapter of her book about the Culver House, and Dale Irwin's Decatur collection is displayed. The admission is free. To help, the Culver House restoration is in need of donations of money and time. Anyone interested in giving money or helping out with work at the Culver House should call Kim Aukamp at the Wabash Depot at 217-233-0800. That's 233-0800. The foundation is looking for volunteer plumbers, painters, anyone handy or willing to give their time. Kane, we know everything before we know it. Before we know everything. My firm belief is the internet can change the world by making us all realize our similarities are far greater than our differences. That belief is tested every time I reluctantly crawl into the morass that comprises commenting on stories in the unexpected cesspools of social media. Isn't it fascinating that every time the temptation to abandon it all arises, something comes up like a giraffe giving birth on a live stream? Hundreds of thousands of people were glued to YouTube for months watching a live stream of an animal housed in a private, for-profit, and non-accredited zoo. The entire episode encapsulated our interest, internet experience, in an easy-to-digest package. Among the highlights, the time-wasted argument took center stage again. Anytime someone has a different idea of fun, we're told they have no life and need to get out of the basement. This criticism is approaching its 30th anniversary. Perhaps critics should create some fresh insults. We are instant experts. As more and more people viewed the live stream, more and more felt compelled to observe negatives about the animal's situation, bemoaning the poor animal's fate. The comments would come after a few minutes of watching it, even if it even took that long. Never mind the caretaker's ability to tend to the giraffe for the years before anyone outside of its regional area were event aware of Animal Adventure Park in Harpersville, New York. The social media observers knew better, and some were rapid to anger when their concerns were rebuffed. The concern of the instant experts eventually overwhelmed the small zoo. It announced it was discontinuing the live feed earlier this week as its server was overrun by concerns about a minor injury suffered by April, one described as the equivalent of a human rolling an ankle. Hoax uncoverers had their run of fun as well. We're in a time where the phrase fake news means only and exactly whatever the intention of the speaker is. So when April Fool's Day came around, the absence of a baby giraffe led to questions of whether we were watching old footage or whether the clearly pregnant and clearly uncomfortable mother-to-be was even the right gender to give birth, all because of an inability to precisely determine the time of birth for an animal whose gestation period lasts 400 to 460 days. Sometimes, even when you agree with an activist's position, their style and incessant nagging can tempt you to join the other side. A complaint of nude sexual content early on during the live stream led you to YouTube temporarily removing the live feed. It was quickly restored and fingers were pointed at the people for the ethical treatment of animals. PETA denied orchestrating the complaints, but quickly added the statement that he or she will be denied virtually everything natural and important to him or her, so people can gawk at the spectacle of having a giraffe in New York State. Apparently, PETA would have preferred a pregnant April to be returned to sub-Saharan Africa. You can oppose zoos all you want, and you can take advantage of every opportunity to complain about others' opportunism, and PETA and many other observers were quick to take the zoo to task. Animal Adventure Park is a private, for-profit venture. One of social media's favorite sports is complaining when for-profit companies do things for profit. So when the zoo augmented its free live stream with an ad from Toys R Us, that was considered not good. And when the zoo offered a text alert notice for a fee and the chance to submit potential names with an additional fee, it was accused of opportunism. Just like PETA, yet in the midst of all these discussions, we were able to see a pair of giraffes interact in an environment designed for them, and we saw plenty. YouTube logged 232 million live views and 7.6 billion minutes of viewing. That was of something that was actually happening in live time. With any luck, amid all the fussing, fretting, and lamenting, thousands learned something, or at worst, were distracted from their own issues for a bit. That's part of the miracle of the Internet, if we allow it to work. In government and politics, Davis defends health care plan as House compromise arises. Decatur. As lawmakers crafted a compromise to bring the Republican health care overhaul to a vote, U.S. Representative Rodney Davis touted the need for change but pledged that he would only support a plan that covered pre-existing conditions. The Taylorville Republican said he was part of a small group of lawmakers working directly with Vice President Mike Pence to revive the legislation, which would repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But Davis reiterated his commitment to some of the 2010 law's most popular provisions. My wife is a cancer survivor, 18 years this month. You really think I want to take away coverage for people who got a disease that they didn't ask for? Davis said. Lifetime caps on coverage. People say we're going to take those away. No. scare tactics. Davis's comments came during a meeting at his Decatur office with a group of 10 constituents, most of whom represented the NAACP Decatur branch, members of the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. Illinois People's Action and NAACP Champaign branch also spoke. A reporter from the Herald and Review was invited to observe. The group also peppered Davis with questions about school vouchers, voter suppression laws, and President Donald Trump's tax returns. The exchange about health care grew the most heated, however, as Davis responded to concerns that the Republican plan would make it more difficult or expensive for people to become insured. House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, halted a vote on the measure last month when it became clear that the plan didn't have enough GOP support to pass. Leaders of the Conservative Freedom Caucus and moderate Tuesday group brokered a compromise that could bring the deal back to the floor, the Associated Press reported Thursday. Trump struck a sanguine tone, telling reporters progress was being made on a great plan for the health care overhaul. "We have a good chance of getting it soon," Trump said. "I'd like to say next week." During the Decatur meeting, local physician Dr. Kathleen Miller cited an analysis from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which said last month that the Republican bill would have resulted in 24 million additional uninsured people in a decade. The office also said it would lead to higher out-of-pocket medical costs for many lower-income and people just shy of age 65 when they would become eligible for Medicare. Davis dismissed the analysis, saying the office had already been proven inaccurate when it overestimated how many people would become insured under the Affordable Care Act. "If you lower the cost for the young and the healthy, then the cost for the older and the pre-existing conditions is going to go up," Miller said. "The money has to come from somewhere." "There's something called competition," Davis said. "Not in medicine, there's not. That doesn't work in medicine," Miller responded. Among other measures, Davis said Republicans want to allow groups such as the NAACP to band together nationwide and offer health coverage to members. "People say that can't happen because it's got to be at the state level. No, that's BS," he said. This isn't the first time that Davis has met with members of the NAACP Decatur branch, said its president, Janelle Norman. She said the group appreciated the chance to raise issues and clarify his answers to their questions. Davis on the issues. On whether he would support voting rights legislation backed by the NAACP. His answer, "I would vote for any law that would make sure everybody got a chance to vote." On school vouchers, "I've never been a fan of vouchers. A voucher system in rural America and places like Taylorville is going to cost the district more when most parents are satisfied with the system that we have and with the public school system that we have." On Trump's tax returns, "Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and get through the audit and let him decide to release it. If we want to go ahead and pass a law for future people who run for president to release tax returns, so be it. But in the end, right now, let's actually focus on the issues at hand." On investigating Russia's involvement in U.S. affairs, "Let's let the House and Senate Intelligence Committee do their jobs first before we start talking about costing taxpayers millions of dollars to set up an independent committee that will take longer to get the answers we want." Page 3, Area Briefs. Decatur. Murray declares candidacy. Samantha Murray has announced she will seek to replace Steve Bean next year as the Macon County Clerk. Murray, 24, graduated from the University of Illinois in 2014 with a degree in communication and sociology. Murray, a Harristown Republican, is a senior research and operations manager for the government office of Governor Bruce Rauner. She previously worked in the county clerk's office in Champaign, Tate and Lyle, and as a legal assistant. Murray is the first candidate to publicly announce a run for clerk. Bean, who has served as clerk since 1990, said earlier this month that he would not seek re-election. His term ends November 30, 2018. The county clerk is the head election authority in the county, as well as the issuer of vital records such as wedding licenses and birth certificates. Decatur. Work to close station number 4. Renovations will close station number 4 at 2760 North 22nd Street from Tuesday, April 25th to Thursday, May 11th, according to news release from the City of Decatur. During the closure, the crew will operate out of fire station number 2 at 2707 East William Street. In 2016, the Decatur City Council approved agreements for work to begin making improvements to the city's fire stations, public service facilities with an average age of nearly 51 years, marked by maintenance and local restraints. Over time, the city said, some stations have fallen into disrepair and are faced with plumbing deficiencies, leaky roofs, structural issues, and HVAC failures, while some of the older facilities cannot accommodate new equipment. Decatur Symphony's final show set. The Decatur Youth Symphony Orchestra will present its final concert of the season, 6 p.m. Sunday, April 23rd, in the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. The Millikan Children's Choir will join the symphony, as well as two student soloists, Angelina Arazi and Miruna Ainon. The orchestra is directed by Neil Smith, music professor at Millikan University. The performance is free and open to the public. Public safety. Video. Fire demonstration ignited at Decatur Conference Center. To some of the people witnessing the two fires that were intentionally set in a hotel parking lot, it was a dramatic demonstration of the effectiveness of fire sprinklers. But for David Bartley, a maintenance electrician for the Housing Authority of Champaign County, it was much more than that. In 2005, I lost my house to a fire, an electrical fire in my son's bedroom, said Bartley, who was on site as a conference attendee. I ran upstairs with a 5-pound fire extinguisher. When I opened the door, it ignited a flashback. It knocked me down on my back. The residents of Bartley's century-old house in Villa Grove, 7 children and 3 adults, all made it to safety. But Bartley said he had been troubled all these years by the idea that he might have been able to save his house by discharging the fire extinguisher. But after seeing the demonstration of 2 makeshift bedrooms set on fire by the Northern Illinois Fire Sprinkler Advisory Board, Bartley said that he has a brand new perspective on the fire that occurred the day after Christmas more than 11 years ago. After witnessing that, my 5-pound fire extinguisher would have been like spitting on a bonfire, Bartley said. For me, it gave me peace of mind that I did the right thing for my family. The main point of the demonstration Thursday afternoon was that sprinkler technology is readily available and works flawlessly, said Bob Wetzel, Fire Safety Compliance Manager for the State Fire Marshal's Office. Wetzel, a retired 26-year Decatur firefighter, was at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel to teach fire safety at a maintenance and management conference of the Illinois Association of Housing Authorities. The conference, held annually in the city, drew 290 people from 70 housing authorities. Wetzel invited Tom Leah, executive director of the Sprinkler Advisory Board, to orchestrate the side-by-side burn for conference attendees. The demonstration showed the difference between a room with a sprinkler, which was automatically extinguished shortly after its ignition, and an unprotected room, which quickly exploded into raging blaze and required firefighters to extinguish it. This gave people an opportunity to see firsthand what the danger of a fire is like when they see the power of the fire and the amount of heat it generates, said Wetzel. Those duties include regulation of fire sprinkler contractors. Imagine if that was in a 12,000-square-foot house. The advisory board, which travels throughout the state promoting sprinkler systems, performed 54 side-by-side demonstrations last year. One challenge standing in the way of fire safety is a hodgepodge of building codes, some of which allow construction without sprinklers. There are 3,500 separate building codes in Illinois, each for different jurisdictions, Wetzel said. Each one can pick and choose the different codes they want. In local news, future of landlines for AT&T consumers is in legislative limbo. Decatur. A battle over the future of landline phones has dialed up in the land of Lincoln. Consumer rights groups in Illinois, including the Citizens Utility Board, Illinois Public Interest Research Group, and AARP, are touring the state to highlight what they say is legislation that could end landline phone service from AT&T. They say that could shift the estimated 1.2 million Illinois residents who use landline service to more expensive plans. Two bills, Senate Bill 1381 and House Bill 2691, are under consideration in the General Assembly. They would deregulate phone service and abolish a state requirement that AT&T serve traditional landline customers. The bills come as the state's Telecommunication Act expires July 1st and comes up for review. If the bills are passed, it would be up to the Federal Communications Commission to decide whether AT&T could stop offering landline service. While such a step is likely years away, opponents of the plan say it hurts those who rely on landlines for regular communication. People who depend on this should not have it stripped away, said Jim Chilson, spokesman for CUB, during a stop Thursday afternoon at the Decatur-Macon County Senior Center. The groups have created a website, saveourphoneservice.com, so residents can contact their legislators. Those whose landline services are through other providers would not be affected by the legislation, Chilson said. AT&T has said concerns about the bills are unfounded. AT&T Illinois President Paul LaSchiazza has said that the proposals would modernize the current law and allow the company to build a stronger network that handles services from internet streaming to 911. He said legislation would allow AT&T to invest more money into modern lines such as fiber internet, new copper, and coaxial cable. Home phone service is not going away, LaSchiazza said. About 41% of U.S. households had only wireless phones in the second half of 2013, according to a report by the National Center for Health Statistics. The center, the statistical arm of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, estimated that 39.1% of adults and 47.1% of children lived in wireless-only households. Consumer rights groups believe the plans in front of Illinois lawmakers do not go far enough to protect residents who live in rural areas where wireless service can be hit or miss. They also argue that landlines are comforting for residents who would not need to worry about their phone battery at a critical moment. Those critical moments are what concerns Jonathan Thomas, director of the Macon County Emergency Telephone System Board. He said a 911 call from a landline can be traced exactly, but that's not true of cell phones. At some point in the future, the technology may change where it gets to be more accurate, Thomas said, but I don't think we're at a point, technology-wise, where we can eliminate landlines. Charleston. The city's tourism board is attempting to generate support from the community for a $20,000 park grant through the National Recreation and Park Association. The grant is decided by popular vote in a national contest. Anyone can vote on one of the 15 communities listed across the nation or by writing in a community to receive $20,000. The community with the most votes by the end of April wins the grant. Laura Smallhorn, tourism board member, said the tourism board decided a couple of weeks ago to try and garner votes for Charleston in the month-long voting contest. Charleston is not one of the 15, but can be a write-in candidate for the $20,000 Meet Me in the Park grant. According to the NRPA, a person can nominate a city, town, or county anywhere in the U.S. for a chance to win the grant specifically for a project in one local park within that community. The list of events of things happening in the area is too numerous to mention, but tomorrow's highlight is the Fairy Tale Ball, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Children's Museum of Illinois. That's at 217-423-5437, 423-5437. $7 for members, $10 non-members. Pre-registration and prepayment are required. Children must be accompanied by a paying adult. Okay, we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 21st, 2017. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.